This year marks the 50th anniversary of Atlantic Records. Rock historian Ed Ward is celebrating with a series on the history of the label. In this final part, he examines how the label had to change in the late 60s in order to survive. It backed off from the soul music that had been its bread and butter for 20 years and jumped into territory it had never before explored, rock.
The beat goes on, the beat goes on.
Drums keep pounding a rhythm to the brain. La-da-da-da-dee, la-da-da-da-da.
In the late 60s, everything changed for Atlantic Records. As Black Power became a force in the record industry, the label began to look elsewhere for talent. The lesson the Beatles taught hadn't been wasted on Atlantic. The real money was in conquering the pop charts with a pop act. Atlantic had never really had a successful white artist, with the exception of Bobby Darin, who was closer to a Frank Sinatra figure, and who, in any case, had died tragically young. The label had bid on Elvis Presley when his Sun Records contract was up, but balked at the ridiculous figure his manager was asking, and it had never even been in the running for the Beatles or other British invasion acts. The breakthrough came in 1965 with a bunch of Italian-American kids.
One, two, three.
Good luck. Good luck. Good luck. Good luck.
Young Rascals were really just a white soul band, although they racked up hit after hit. Finding a way into the West Coast psychedelic sound proved a bit more difficult. Nobody at the label could figure out what was good and what was bad, so they relied on the old boy network. Sonny Bono had worked in the black record business and recorded with Phil Spector, so when he formed a folk rock act with his wife Cher, they found a home in Atlantic. After the label had delivered a couple of hits for the pair, their managers came up with another idea. Buffalo Springfield was one of the hippest groups in Los Angeles, although it wouldn't last long before its two main songwriters, Stephen Stills and Neil Young, spun off solo careers. The band's song about the Sunset Strip riots, For What It's Worth, even became a top 10 hit. Now it was time to get a British act. So when London manager Robert Stigwood put his new supergroup up for auction, Atlantic was determined to get them.
It's getting near dawn. Lights close the tired eyes. I'll soon be with you, my love. Give you my dull surprise. I'll be with you, darling, soon. I'll be with you when the stars start falling.
Cream, although they also weren't particularly stable as a group, brought Atlantic all the hip credibility it could have desired, especially after the band's second album, Wheels of Fire, on which the trio's improvisations stretched out onto two LPs, and they were being held up as the most musically progressive group in the world. But they too broke up. Again, Atlantic went in search of pop success, and again, they found it. Led Zeppelin became one of the world's top-selling bands, and Atlantic continues to make money off of their back catalog, although the band broke up after the death of their drummer, John Bonham, in 1980. The label also maintained good relations with Cream's former guitarist, Eric Clapton, and when he joined up with Delaney and Bonnie Bramlett, a white soul act, Atlantic put out their record, although Clapton, by design, stayed in the background. But when he took the band's rhythm section and announced that he'd started Derek and the Dominoes, Atlantic had one of their Southern session guitarists sit in, and another classic was born. Dwayne Allman was what the entire record industry was looking for, someone who could go head-to-head with an Eric Clapton and not get bloodied. So when he announced that the band he and his brother Greg had led for years was signing to Capricorn, a label owned by Otis Redding's former manager, Atlantic made sure they obtained rights to it. The Allman Brothers Band's lineup didn't last long, though. Dwayne died in a motorcycle accident in 1971, age 24. Another thing had changed for Atlantic in 1968, though. The label surrendered its independence and was bought by Warner Brothers, who put Atlantic founder Ahmet Erdogan on the board of directors of Warner Entertainment. It was a sign of the times. It was getting harder for independent labels to remain competitive, and the money Atlantic got from the corporate embrace allowed them to take more chances. In the next few years, they'd launch an unsuccessful country division with Willie Nelson, just before he became a superstar, add to their lucrative stable of heavy metal bands with AC/DC and others, and even score the last chart hit with a jazz record, compared to what, with Les McCann and Eddie Harris. Atlantic's not the label it once was, but the very fact that it's managed to survive for 50 years makes it unique in the annals of American popular music history.
Ed Ward is our rock historian. Our series on Atlantic was produced by Phyllis Myers.